Hello and welcome to our case study call for clinical mastery of the digestive system. I'm Dr. Rita Marie Moscalzo, and the purpose of these calls is to support you in helping to understand, like, what is the next step? How do I interpret this lab? How do I interpret these symptoms when it comes to people that you're working with as a result of using the materials in this program? So we have a couple of really good cases that were submitted in advance. This is also the opportunity for us to do question and answer. And I know that, Lynn, did you double check to see if there were any questions that were posted in advance? Because I usually like to do those right away. Were there questions posted on the,
nope,
the site?
Nope. I checked.
Okay,
well,
perfect.
No, actually, I take that back. If there were any, there was one, and I put it in the Q&A already.
So, Martine?
Yep.
Okay, great. So I'll start with that one. We'll go through that, and then we'll go and switch over to doing the cases. So I just want to give everybody a heads up when you're typing into the chat, the Q&A part, try to keep, like, paragraphs, like spaces between paragraphs, because as I sit here looking at this, all the lines thin together, and when it's in shorter paragraphs, it's easier for me to chunk it. Client is diagnosed with Crohn's 2 years after being hospitalized twice, losing lots of weight, was put on different types of medication that caused severe inflammation in joints and severe joint pain. The patient trains for long distance running, typically eats a diet very high in gluten and grains. Disease is mostly asymptomatic for the moment, except for occasional diarrhea and low motility, one bowel movement per day or less. But latest colonoscopy shows major inflammation in intestine with near blockages in some areas. Doctors put him on Humira for a month and a half ago, which seems to be tolerated. Last week, he stopped eating gluten and grains for a few days upon my recommendation and started exhibiting symptoms of histaminosis and stomach pain after eating high histamine foods, suspecting banana sensitivity, suspected getting itchy mouth after eating them, recommended autoimmune paleo protocol with first month low histamine food, avoiding bananas, also recommended vitamin C and B6, omega-3 supplementation, moringa powder, probiotics. L-rhamnosis and Bifidobacter infantis. Recommended well-cooked vegetables, lowering stress, anything else you would recommend? Any thoughts on how else to eliminate histamine load and reduce Crohn's inflammation? So I'm just going to give a few hints for everybody when you're submitting a case. Always good to know the age. This is obviously a he because you use the word he, but it should start with, 26-year-old female patient presents with, 27-year-old, male client presents with. Okay, so it helps to know the age of the person. Okay, that's really important. It helps to know their weight and their height. Like, are they obese? Are they underweight or slight? Okay, you said he started losing weight, but you didn't say, where he started out to begin with. So that helps with recommending a course of action. You may recommend a very different course of action for someone who's got a lot of extra weight on them versus someone who's on the verge of emaciation. So those are really important pieces that should be reported. You got him off of gluten and grains. Make sure that he's 100% off those. It sounds like it was just recently, last week. So it's going to take some time for that healing to happen. So you're going to need to look at the leaky gut protocols and work at that. I like, for things like Crohn's and any kind of inflammatory bowel disease, I like having them go on an all-liquid or all-blended diet for about a month to slow things down and calm things down and keep the fiber, which is really good for your intestine, from actually aggravating the open wounds, technically, is what they have in their intestinal tract. I like to put them on that, and that's why I asked about approximately weight, because if this person still has some extra weight on their body, I can even suggest, if they're willing, to do a fast, whether it's a 3-day, 5-day, 7-day, whether it's a water fast or a juice fast, because those sorts of things can make a huge difference. Now, you'd be careful with what kind of juices you might recommend in terms of the histamine qualities, is looking that up, but it's super important to just give it a period of healing. If not, then they can do blended stuff. If there's somebody that's underweight, I would normally recommend that when you're doing a blended, that you soak nuts or seeds to germinate them, make them more easy to digest, and then make nut milks or nut butters or nut pâtés or thin things that aren't going to aggravate their gut, with as much vegetable matter as they can tolerate, but not raw. So take them off of all raw foods right now, unless they tolerate juices, and that would give them a lot of the raw nutrition. But the fibers in a raw, like a salad or celery sticks or anything like that, could be really aggravating. So I like to just really calm down the load for a good 30 days with these people. And I would put them on a full elimination diet, not just taking them off gluten and grains, but going through a full elimination diet. If you are doing an autoimmune paleo, most likely you've got them off of things like other grains, right? And then dairy, because there's usually no dairy on a paleo, but if not, I would make sure he's off of dairy, very mucus forming, and can, and it's inflammatory. I would also make sure, I would check eggs, because eggs are one of the top allergens, and some people are sensitive to them. You want to make sure that they're on a really easy to digest, well absorbed, or easy to digest and absorb diet. So seeing, making sure that they're taking enzymes with the food, making sure he's doing all the things we teach you about, which is the chewing, sitting down and chewing really well, and not overstressing. What happens is they start to take medication, they start to feel better, and then they go back and eat the foods that are actually aggravating them in the first place. If you haven't already done so, we have a whole module piece on inflammatory bowel disease, which has some thoughts and some ideas and some of the things that you can do to try to figure it out. But my biggest thing would be to help with the inflammation is to get them on a liquid diet, liquid or blended diet, no cooked, and then do that for a month. And also be doing anti-inflammatories. Boswellia has some really good studies. I talk about that in that module. Boswellia is a really good one. I've used it very successfully with people who had just bleeding, constant bleeding, Crohn's, and gotten that under control. So I would look at Boswellia. I'd look at things to heal the leaky gut. So look at that section. Look at anti-inflammatory type things. The best ones for the gut tend to be turmeric and Boswellia. But, you know, you can look at glutamine, but depends on their other situations. If they tend to be a high stress, high anxiety person, sometimes the glutamine can aggravate that because they don't have the right enzymes to convert it to GABA, and it goes to glutamate, and then they end up with a excitatory neurotransmitters. So those are the things that I would say off the top of my head. I'll ask Lynn if she has anything else to add to it. Broths. I personally like the vegan version of a bone broth just because I'm concerned about lead build up in animal bone broth, but things like broth made from mushrooms, some of the medicinal mushrooms that can be simmered for a long period of time and get in a broth, and then sea vegetables, you know, with various whatever vegetables he tolerates, carrot, celery, et cetera, make a really nice broth, and that can be healing. And then you might want to get them on a protein powder or pure form of amino acid supplementation to help with the healing, to keep as he keeps the load of the food down. Those are the things I can think of off the top of my head. And like I said, make sure I spit, you know, I'm not going to spit back the entirety of the module, but there is like an hour presentation that you can go back to and listen to. And there's another hour and a half or two on leaky gut. So that's where I would be looking. Any additional things you might want to add, Lynn?
Yep. So there's two things. She had mentioned that he is a long distance runner. I used to be a long distance runner. My whole family, we've always been, you know, cross country, that whole thing. So I have a lot of friends who do marathons and so forth. And it is extremely common to see them running across that line with blood dripping down their legs because and they almost laugh it off like it's a badge of honor to have that type of inflammation. And so if I would really encourage this person to discontinue for at least a little while the running, because that really exacerbates the inflammation.
Yeah, I would agree. It's a stress with the adrenals, seriously. And it's not saying he has to do it permanently, but while he's in the healing phase, you know, maybe goes out and runs a couple miles here and there, nice slow pace, go around the track, go out in the woods, you know, do some lighter exercise. But that, you're right, that's going to interfere with the healing process.
And then the other part is with the bananas, there's that oral allergy syndrome. And that's, and again, there's an underlying why, but that's also one of the ragweed pollen triggers. So there's bananas, cucumbers, melons, sunflower seeds, and zucchini that fall into that area. But again, it's why. And, you know, so, you know, again, doing things to clean up digestion so that the liver is functioning well and all those pathways are clear will help with that.
And the fact that he's just been off of gluten and grains for a week.
Yeah.
That's, you know, there's a lot of healing to do. It can take 6 months to a year to a year and a half.
Exactly. Just for the antibodies. Yeah.
But I will say that I have had great success with, you know, complete allergy elimination, with putting somebody on a liquid or blended diet for 30 days, avoiding any salads or raw vegetables, avoiding anything that they suspect they're allergic to, and avoiding the top 6-7 allergens, avoiding all sugar, and then taking the boswellia and the turmeric and, you know, any other anti-inflammatory stuff that you can come up with.
Right. Well, and like I said, if there's that oral allergy syndrome, because she said his mouth would get itchy from bananas.
Yeah.
And so that's the ragweed pollen. And so
looking at the cross-reactions for that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So while she's doing the autoimmune protocol, also avoid not just bananas, but the cucumbers, melons, sunflower seeds, and zucchini.
Right. And you know, other things that's important in any autoimmune is to look at the antioxidant status. So, you know, glutathione might be low. There's a cream that Apex makes called OxyCell, which has glutathione and superoxide dismutase and catalase and a whole bunch of other antioxidants in it. And, you know, leaky gut. The things you want to look at with any autoimmune condition are leaky gut, some sort of a hidden infection somewhere, which easily he could have a gut infection. Doing a stool analysis may not be a bad idea. Liver stuff like toxicity, heavy metals, or other toxins that are disrupting the liver detoxification pathways. All autoimmune diseases have probably all three of those. And a stress, and the stress could easily be, I don't know how much long distance running this person's doing, but if they're doing a lot of events, a lot of long distance events, that's a stress on the body, and that could be a stress that throws somebody over the edge when they have the HLA, what is it, B27? I think it is, that predisposes to Crohn's.
Right.
I think it's B27. I'm just pulling that out of the air from way back when it just came, so I'm figuring it might be right.
it sounds right to me.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Yeah, okay. So if there's any other questions, let's check them. But I would like to go get those two studies done.
Yep.
Okay, so there are some questions. If you could take any questions that are in the chat, I could put them into the Q&A. That way I can see them better because the chat like rolls over quickly while I'm trying to read it. So right now what I'm going to do, if you aren't already on the Join Me, you just go to join.me / Dr. Rita Marie, or just go to Join Me and it asks you for a code and you put in Dr. Rita Marie. I'm going to share my screen. I've got, I think it's Ambly and then Evelyn, I think, are the two that I have. Ambly is the name of the person in the program. And she has a female, and then the other one is a very hard case for me to fathom. So we really want to give that one some attention. It looks like a really challenging case. So these are those challenging cases. Whew. All right.
Yep.
So that's what we're here for. So on the Join Me, you should be able to see my screen momentarily. Share window. And all right, can you see my window? I'll see if it'll let me record, but I think it'll record without sound.
Yeah, it will record without sound.
And that's the problem with this. I'll try.
Yep.
So at least I get that. Maybe we can merge the two together. Okay, so we are at 49. So we're at let's just under 20 minutes into the call, just so a note on the recording. Okay, so we've got Ambi, and I think Ambi's on the phone. So if Ambi, if you want to open her line up, we can open her line up to get clarifying questions. This is our form, our case study form. It's fairly comprehensive. You'd probably want a little bit more comprehensive a form when you're working with people, but this covers most of the bases that I would like to have when I'm working on helping you with what the next step. So just know that our approach to these cases is to give you an idea of what's the next step to take. What are the tests you want to do? What are the questions you want to ask? Not necessarily to say, hey, here's a plan. Go ahead and then put it in, because it's putting together a plan. I mean, the word protocol is used a lot, but I'm not a big fan of the word protocol just because that implies that it's a protocol for a particular disease or condition. So we're going to come up with a protocol that's based on the particular person. So this person is female, age 44, 5'3", and 150 pounds. So what do we know right away? Is this person normal weight, underweight, or overweight?
Are you asking me? And Ambi's line is open, just so you
know. Ambi, your line is open. Say hi. I hear some banging. Ambi?
Yeah, hi.
Ambi? Hi.
Go. There you go.
Yeah.
Hi.
Okay, great.
Yeah. So I always ask the question, the first thing you want to look at is their height, weight, you know, et cetera. And I look at 5'3", 150 pounds. What am I thinking? Overweight, underweight, or normal weight?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So definitely overweight.
Definitely overweight, right? So as soon as we see somebody's overweight, and we're not coming up with prejudices or any kind of negativity against people who are overweight, but chances are good if someone's overweight that they either are overeating tremendously or they have a metabolic problem that's causing them to put on weight without regard to the number of calories that are coming in. So one or the other, we have a problem when we have somebody's overweight. It's not just mm-hmm. a cosmetic thing, right? So it could be mm-hmm. insulin resistance. It could be maldigestion. It could be liver problems where the liver is not able to detoxify, so it keeps putting things out. So there's a bunch of stuff. So right away, we want to use all the information we get from a person to just start those wheels turning. So she's got two kids, and her highest priority health concerns are throbbing headaches for 5 to 7 years, ouch, congestion of sinuses, geographic tongue. For those of you who don't know what geographic tongue is, it's just when you look at their tongue, it looks like a map because there's spots where there's some red and pink spots, and then the rest of it looks normal. So it kind of has this geographic look to it. Postnasal drip with clear mucus, not yellow or green, very good for just differentiating, because clear mucus usually means an irritation or an allergy versus yellow or green, which would mean an infectious process. So really important to differentiate that. Extreme tiredness, food sensitivities, and suspecting histamine intolerance now. Rating is very severe, and she also experiences vertigo, almost fainted once, couldn't breathe properly, and it lasts for 2 or 3 days if full-blown. The veins, vessels in her head hurt so bad, and the pain moves, seems like wherever the mucus and the fluid goes. So these are really good observations, Ambi, because you are you're not just relating certain things. You're relating all this stuff, and maybe she wrote this or you, but either way, there's a lot of good observation going on here and a lot of good information, because we don't just want to know, hey, I have headaches. They're a scale of 8 to 10, and I get them every 3 months. This is very good description. So that's great. Mm-hmm. She's got weight issues, belly fat, fatigue, low in iron, and irregular periods. She's borderline diabetic, sometimes experiencing racing heart and increased palpitations. Okay. So borderline diabetic, whenever somebody says that to me, I always want to know, oh, okay, your doctor told you were borderline diabetic. What's your blood sugar? What were your actual blood sugar numbers? Did they measure your hemoglobin A1C? What's that? So to actually get some actual concrete numbers. Generally, if they've been told they're borderline diabetic their blood sugars are probably in, they're at least above 100, but most of the time when the doctor tells them they're borderline, it's usually in the one teens. And then, let's see. So surgeries, hospitalizations, accidents, okay. So she's had irregular menses from the beginning, started age 14, started gaining fat around her belly since age 16. So we start to think, there's some sort of hormonal thing, but again, it could be a habit thing. So you want to ask a lot about what are they eating, which we'll get to in a little while, like, because I know you put that down. To gallbladder surgery, so now we're thinking, oh, problem with fats, okay? Problem with dealing with fats. Laparoscopic around age 25 and at a very young age, not even in the classic profile. You know, the classic profile for gallbladder problems is female fat, fertile in 40. Okay, so she's got the female, she's got the fertile, she's got a couple of kids, she's overweight, but she's not 40, right? And a lot of times the ones that have the gallbladder, they're fertile. When they say fertile, they're like they have 3, 4, 5. Like my mom had like 9 kids. She had gallbladder issues. I don't think it had to do with her having a lot, them having a lot of kids. It just happens to be that when there's imbalances, the having the babies and the stress of giving birth make a lot of stress on the system. Okay. She had a severe throat infection after her surgery. Was on a very strong antibiotic 2 to 3 weeks, followed dietary restriction for 2 to 3 months, and slowly started eating everything. When you say dietary restriction, what does that mean?
Like low fat, low protein at that particular time.
Okay. And was that something she came up with, or did her doctor tell her, hey, you just had this gallbladder surgery, so now you need to be careful?
Yeah.
Okay. And then here's another question to always ask. What prompted her to slowly start eating everything again?
I think, again, the doctor told her to try things, and if she could digest them well, she'll
be fine.
Slowly.
Okay. If you can digest Oreos now, go for it. If you can digest... You can digest fried chicken. No worries, lady. None of that stuff had anything to do with you having a problem in the first place. As long as you don't get sick from it now immediately, you're good. We can't take your gallbladder out, so you can't ever relapse. Yay! Right. It's when you word it like that, it sounds insane. But it's really what they're saying, isn't it?
Right.
Sad. She had her first child at 29, had an epidural, tough labor, on strong painkillers, got low in iron, though don't remember the numbers, lost pregnancy weight, but the belly fat did not reduce much. So she's had a problem with belly fat for a long time, which she's probably had insulin resistance ever since. I see a lot of teenagers with the belly hanging over their pants, even though they're pretty athletic in other places, and that's an insulin resistance issue. Had a second child at 33, so four year spacing, diagnosed with gestational diabetes, controlled with diet and blood testing. Now, here's the thing that you always want to be suspicious of when they say, oh, and the doctor says it's controlled. Because the doctor saying their diabetes is controlled generally means that their postprandial, 2-hour postprandial glucose is 140 or less, which is ludicrous because it should be 85. And then that their hemoglobin A1C is 7 or less, which is ludicrous because it should be 5. Okay? So that's what well-controlled is. So always ask for that and make sure that you allow the person that you're working with to know that that may be controlled by your doctor, but what that means is you're still at extreme high risk because you're in this danger zone. Let's see. So she started to have noticed lowered immunity, weakness, and frequent morning headaches as soon as she woke up. Now I realize must be some food sensitivities causing head congestion, which turned into throbbing. Okay. So it seems like it was after her pregnancy. She's how old now? She's 44, so it was basically 11 years ago when she had her baby. But it seems like shortly after that, the child wasn't a good sleeper, so lots of stress, didn't sleep well for 2 years, so sleep deprivation, that's going to make insulin resistance worse. noticed the lowering immunity, weakness, frequent morning headaches. So that's when she started to realize her headaches. Because what did she say up here, about 7 years of headaches? Is that right? Yeah, last 5 to 7 years. So it was something in that pregnancy that weakened her enough that it threw her over the edge until she got to, she developed this. She's probably had the sensitivities all along, but she was young and she had tolerance. Now, 2 babies later and a gallbladder surgery, her tolerance isn't there as well. Right? So she saw the family doctor on an antibiotic. So she's had antibiotics a fair amount. She's had quite a bit of medication and intervention here. Got blood work done about 2 years after delivery, found borderline diabetic. So that's been 9 years that she's been found borderline diabetic, was asked to manage it with diet and exercise. Should I take care of diet but cannot muster enough energy to take care of kids? One teen and one preteen. Now, here's the thing. When somebody says, I take care of my diet, I'm on a good diet, that's not good enough, right? We want to know the exacts, because I think I saw further down that she's eating her things that she's sensitive to. So recently got a large boil on her shoulder, diagnosed as a sebaceous cyst, and that's the fat, right? Before I started L-glutamine for about 2 weeks, 3,000 milligrams a day, I'm thinking that could have fed the bacteria in the cyst, possibly. I noticed the cyst since 1 year. So they gave me an antibiotic again, okay, and stopped glutamine. So now we're knowing that her gut flora is probably a disaster because she has had so many antibiotics and other interventions. So other interventions of what she's done up till now. She takes over-the-counter sinus medications, which work slowly if the pain is full-blown. Now, if these headaches sound like sinus issues, right, because they're associated with this congestion. So right away we're thinking, what are her food allergies? What about an elimination diet? Let's get her on an elimination diet. If there's if it becomes an infection, then it gets bad, and then the antibiotics, so not so frequent now. So she tries to avoid antibiotics unless unavoidable. So she's had a repeat chronic sinus infection, sinus inflammation, which causes headaches. So what kind of things are you thinking here when you hear all this?
There's dysbiosis, and then food sensitivity. And the immunity is lowered. Those are the major things I can think of.
Yeah, it's hard to hear you. So are you saying you're seeing a lot of mucus, and you're thinking an allergic and an inflammatory reaction?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, and so we want to know why. So she says it's a mystery. I'm off gluten. How long was she off gluten?
She's been like on and off. Recently, it's been about 3 months.
3 months has been off gluten. Is she 100% off gluten, or is she off gluten except when she goes to birthday parties and whatnot?
I think she's not 100%.
Okay. This is something I really want to reinforce with you guys. You can be part gluten-free and not get the results. It has to be 100% to see if they're going to get the results. And have it down long enough to decrease the inflammation, stop the constant inflammation in the gut, which causes leaky gut, which contributes to a lot of things. So clearly there's some allergic component. She's just off gluten, but she's not off of other kinds of cross-reactive foods. She could be on cross-reactive foods. She says anything I eat can trigger mucus generation and inspecting histamine intolerance. I strictly avoid yeasted food, so fermented food, goodness, I cannot enjoy. Once I tried kombucha, made my throat constrict. So a histamine response here. So why is she having bad histamine? There are some genetics that predispose to that, but there's also the dietary factors and the allergy factors. Apple cider vinegar gave her a bad headache. So there's good clues that there's some histamine. Dairy intake is low, small amount in tea, avoid fish, avoid egg, fish oil for that reason. I can't eat anything except some poultry and veggies. Okay, so clearly she needs to do an elimination diet, because what she's doing is she's identifying these allergens but she's not staying away from them long enough to truly heal. So she's got that. She's got to look at the diet. She's got to look at the gut and the healing the gut. Vitamin C is very important as an antihistamine, as is quercetin. So I don't know if you have her on any quercetin or you've talked to her about it, but quercetin is a bioflavonoid that's super good for histamine type reactions. So you may want to look at that. Oftentimes, getting some
of the quercetin, and she tried. She said it didn't seem to work.
Okay, so here's the thing. You can't decide that something seems to work or doesn't within a few days. You've got to have all of it going at the same time. Really pristine, 100% pure on the diet, and taking the vitamin C, and doing the quercetin, and addressing the gut, and allowing it to give it some time. You can't just, it's not a drug that suppresses a symptom. And that's what people are used to. Okay, I take this antihistamine, it makes this symptom go away. So then they compare the natural approach to that fast path. And we're not going to get that because we're not like pulling out the batteries out of the smoke alarm. We're actually going in and trying to put out the fire. And how long does it take to put out a fire sometimes if the fire's big? Right? It could take firefighters weeks sometime to put out a big fire. So explaining it maybe in that terms can help her to stick with it. She said she tested for food sensitivity. So have you seen a diet diary? Have you had her do like a 4-day diet diary?
Not really. Just verbally talked.
Okay, good. So that's a good thing to do because surprises come out. I like to do what I call a food, mood, symptom, and poop journal. Because you want to see how well they're pooping. If they're not pooping, if she's only having one bowel movement every 2 days or one bowel movement a day, and it's kind of, you know, use the Bristol stool diagram that we gave you in the program and take a look at what's the quality of that stool, right? If she's constipated, then she's gonna have a lot of trouble here. If she's got diarrhea, then she's losing a lot of nutrients. So those are real important things, and I usually like to have them just keep track of it. Now, because she's got this glucose sensitivity, I would also recommend that she do a pretty intensive several days of testing all her foods and seeing what the levels go to of her glucose. And then the things that raise it the most, she needs to eliminate. If she's pre-diabetic and she's still drinking milk, if she's still doing any kind of dairy products other than milk, cheese and stuff, they're all mucus forming. So she said she occasionally has it in her coffee. That's enough to trigger a mucus reaction. So I would get her on a mucusless diet, a low allergen diet, take her off the gluten, dairy, corn, soy, eggs, peanuts, and anything else that she's been tested for in the past. Like she said, they tested egg, dairy, pineapple, almonds, and a few others. But she's still eating the dairy and the egg. And she said the gluten didn't figure out, but it's just an IgG test and the gluten for gliadin, and the gluten is so much more than that. So she'd have to do like a Cyrex Ray 3 to see if she's really gluten sensitive, or do Enterolab stool test for gluten to see. Okay. But she's got to get off of all of those. I would get off of all of those, and I would get her to do it for 3 months and then see. Looks like she's got some good supplements. She's got chromium, vitamin D, B-complex, quercetin she's already taken. So with the quercetin, I would be doing 500 milligrams before and after each meal.
Okay.
To keep that response down. She's doing probiotics, so she can't do the probiotic food, it sounds like, because that bothers her. So she's doing probiotics. Make sure she's on a good high-potency strain. Does she have bloating or gas or other kinds of GI symptoms?
Yeah. He complains about it, and most of the time pains, belly is like swollen.
Most of it what?
The belly is swollen. Like she complains that she looks like 5 months pregnant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when the belly gets swollen, you're thinking one of several things. One, you're thinking, well, it's air, methane gas, right? Something like a SIBO response where they're producing this gas from the foods because of the fermentation. Number two, you also need to figure that when there's an allergic reaction, the lymph nodes that line the gut, get swollen. And think about it this way, 22 feet of small intestine, and it's completely lined with little lymph nodes, which are invisible when they're not activated. But if there's something in there that causes an inflammatory response, they all get activated. You suddenly go from having a flat belly to a 5 months pregnant belly in a very short period of time, and it's lymphatic swelling. So it's lymphatic bloating. So she may have a combination of both, and you need to differentiate. You really, it's clear that she has allergies, and she's not 100% staying off of her allergens.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so encourage her that she needs to do 100% for 3 months. Is she willing to do it to get rid of the headaches and to lose the weight? Okay,
mm-hmm.
And then talk to her about, so that's the lymphatic piece, but also if you suspect, based on talking to her and the way it comes on, that there's SIBO issues going on, make sure you go through carefully the module on SIBO. Lots in there. You know, I don't want, you know, there's an hour or more in there, so I don't have time to explain it all right now, but I would recommend you go back there. But the things you want to be careful about is what strain of probiotics she's taking. And if you are suspicious that there's SIBO, I would stick to Bifidobacter, or there's a few, well, I can't remember which ones there, Helvetica maybe, Lactobacillus Helvetica. There's a couple of strains of Lactobacillus that are D-lactate-free. D-lactate-free. And it's those that are going to be safer if she does have a SIBO situation going on. And there's a company called Custom Probiotics where you can get individual probiotics, and you can also get their D-lactic acid-free formula. So that's something to think about, right? Of course, it's in probiotics.
What about meat?
What about what?
What about meat? Meat?
Meat?
Yeah.
Well, it depends. I mean, if she tolerates it and she is using only organic and free range, then I would keep it in moderation with lots of vegetables, but also the fish. It sounds like she stopped the fish and the fish oil, but you can get algae oil for that. So if she's having a problem with the fish, she stopped the fish oil. So I would look at an algae oil. Nordic Naturals has one called, I think it's just called, I don't know, something omega, but it's algae omega is what it's called, algae omega.
Okay.
Okay, and then you can get the DHA EPA for that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it sounds like she's just eating like poultry and
like she's veggies. Concerned about her protein intake. And for breakfast, it's a hard thing because she tries to do oats, but then they tend to raise the blood sugar.
What did she try to have that raises her blood sugar?
Or oats?
Oats? No. No, first of all, you haven't been to our insulin resistance program yet, but you absolutely do not want her having any grains in the morning or any carbs in the morning, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There, because it will shoot up and mess up her blood sugars for the rest of the day. If she is going to do carbs, it would have to be later in the day. That's number one. But number two is, you get her to start testing her blood sugar and see what raises it and stay off of the stuff that raises it. She's concerned about protein while she's doing a therapeutic diet. Have her get some pea protein or rice protein or hemp protein or Sacha Inchi protein, or there's any number of good proteins. So I'd have her do a protein powder. In the morning, she needs to be doing things like greens, lots of greens, whether it's a green powder, whether it's a stir fry, steamed vegetables, a green smoothie, a green soup. So lots of fiber plus green, plus she'd be taking her probiotic in the morning, plus omega-3s. So she could be doing chia seeds, walnuts, hemp seeds. She could be doing the algae omega supplement, but you want to get her to have some good omega-3s in the morning. Really helpful.
Okay.
Okay, but she needs to work on that blood sugar, and she can get that blood sugar under control. My guess is she can do it within a couple of weeks if she's really careful. But the thing is, she knows she has allergies. She's already been tested, yet she's still eating eggs and alternatives to gluten, right? So she really should be off those gluten grains. The Cyrex test array 4 has all the – you can test for cross-reactivities, but I'll tell you the ones that are on there are – quinoa, rice, dairy, like all the gluten grains, like barley and all that. I said dairy. I said eggs. Even sesame seed and hemp are on that list. So if you wanted to do a true elimination diet, you can eliminate everything on that list plus whatever she knows she's allergic to. Mm-hmm. If she's open to it, put her on a juice cleanse. What's that?
Are the nuts okay for someone who's showing histamine intolerance?
Yeah, I think that most of the nuts are fine. Most of the seeds are fine, but it's just like it seems like the sesame and the hemp have a cross-reactive response. But I would say, yeah, they could be just fine, like making soaking nuts and making almond milks and walnut milk. But just be careful about the omega-3-6 ratio. You don't want to have to have too much omega-6 versus omega-3.
Okay.
And work on what's going on in your gut. There's something going on. Is it just the allergies? Is it leaky gut? Did you do the full assessment, the forms we gave you?
No, not yet.
Yeah, do that, because that'll help you identify if she has low stomach acid, if she looks like she has pancreatic function. But I would just take her through a process like we take them through. You can take a look at how we do it through GRAND, steady process. And guaranteed, if you, a lot of people want to skip around. Well, this one applies to this person, this one doesn't. When you take them through that process and then tailor it for them, that's when you get results. And people are shocked at how good the results are just by following through, just by adding the breathing before eating and making sure that they're chewing their food well and making sure that they're off of all the allergens and the potential allergens. So that's where I would go with her. I think you can get results with her fairly easily.
Okay.
You just got to get her on board. You don't mention in there, she doesn't mention in there anything about how much sugar she's eating.
Yeah. I don't have her.
What's that?
I don't have her.
Find out what she's eating, but really a really good sugar history, not just how much sugar she's eating. Is she doing maple syrup, agave, coconut nectar? Is she doing dates, raisins, goji berries?
She cannot eat oatmeal
or honey if she wants to get her blood sugar under control.
Okay.
Neither. If you want some substitute for oatmeal, make some chia porridge and put some stevia or lohan or something like that on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, she's been told she's pre-diabetic, and this has been going on for a very long time, but she hasn't been giving the right advice.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. And if you want to know more about dealing with people with the insulin resistance, the blood sugar program that we have, the insulin resistance practitioner training, is a really good one to take yourself through.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. And that was our easy case for the night. Now, and this is Evelyn. Is Evelyn on the line? Okay,
can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah. Was that you, Evelyn? It says Williamson.
Yes. Hi, Rosemary. Thank you.
Oh, Williamson. There you go. It says Jay. Great. Okay, great. Super. And Lynn, you had your hand up. So did you have anything to add to that other one?
No, I think that was from earlier when you asked if we could raise our hands if you could hear it.
Oh, all right. We'll put you down then. All right. Okay, Evelyn. Wow. This is a challenging case. Is this someone who is a relative of yours, or is this someone who came to you as a client?
No, it's a relative. Yeah,
oh,
a relative.
Man.
Yep. That's why I need your help.
Yeah. Oh, this is hard. All right. I'm just going to go through and present this so everybody else hears it. It's a 5'6" male, age 18 years old, 125 pounds. So what are we thinking right away about his weight? Is he underweight, overweight, or average weight?
If you're asking me, I'd say he's on the thin side. He's lean.
Yeah, definitely on the thin side, right? He may not be emaciated on the thin side, but I would expect a 5'6", 18-year-old to be maybe 140, you know, 145-ish, something like that, maybe a little bit less, depending on how much muscle Gareth. So he's on the thinner side. He's not, you know, extremely thin.
Yeah, he may be 130-ish, but somewhere in that range.
Somewhere in that range, okay.
Yeah.
So he has chronic migraines, severity extreme, priority extreme. He's unable to attend school or even depend on his ability to attend social activities. He has severe, moderate fatigue, moderate priority, moderate severity of fatigue. And he has type 1 diabetes. He's saying it's fairly well controlled lower priority. I would never put diabetes as a lower priority, because this is something that could be contributing to everything that's going on inflammatory-wise. So as
sure,
far as...
It's not the thing that's limiting his function.
It's not the thing that's limiting his function externally, but it might be part, very serious part of the underlying root cause.
Okay.
Okay? So I just want you to keep
mm-hmm.
that in mind, right? That you're always looking for the root. Right? Somebody explained it to us today on a call. It was really cool. I like the way she did it. When you look at a tree, you've got the trunk and then you've got the branches. The trunk, when you can get to that, when you can strengthen the trunk, you're getting to the root. The branches, if there's too many branches, you work on the branches. Symptom relief is like, you know, working on the branches, the tip of the flower. So sometimes you have to go backwards. You work with them. You speak to them in a way that acknowledges their top priority. But you're always
mm-hmm.
thinking in terms of what metabolically is that doing to them. Make sense? And I thank
okay,
you
yes,
for bolding stuff in here, because it really helped me to get through it. he's had a lot of interventions, this poor kid. Hospitalized
yes.
in 1998 at 8 months old. So he's the same age as, he's like 2 months older than my son. Hospitalized 12, so my heart went out to this one. 8 months old for viral gastroenteritis, bloody vomit and diarrhea. Treated with IV fluids and IV glucose for hypoglycemia. So his glucose was low back then. So there was, you know, this blood sugar thing's been going on for a long time. Neurogenic cough from age 10 months to 10 years. Finally diagnosed by a chiropractor, and it resolved in 3 treatments. Prior to that, treatments were multiple courses of antibiotics and prednisone, cough suppressants, and then removal of adenoids. So we know that there's definitely some gut dysbiosis going on. And we know he has a weak digestive tract because he was so sick at age 8 months. You know, yeah, he could have gotten contracted it, but it always tells about their overall inherent strength. Mononucleosis in 2009, so here he is like 11 years old, unable to attend his school the entire second semester of sixth grade for mono, okay? That tells us there's some Epstein-Barr virus that was probably still in his body. Fluconazole responsive fatigue and bone pain in 2010. Coccidiomycosis negative. Multiple sinus infections and episodes of fatigue in November 2010, flu followed by pneumonia in 2011, presumptive diagnosis of Lyme disease, chronic Lyme in 2010, multiple herbal and homeopathic remedies that he either couldn't tolerate or didn't help, missed the entire fourth quarter of school. Did he have a history of a bite? Was he a kid that played outside a lot and went in the fields and in the woods? Was there some exposure
no.
that could have...
Not really. Mm-hmm. He lives in Arizona and not much Lyme here. He did visit Massachusetts and there were ticks around when he was there, but no history of that. That was a presumptive diagnosis from, a doctor that does chronic fatigue illnesses, and that was what she thought it was.
So it might be that, yeah. Non-responsive thrush in 2012 for 8 months, treated with nystatin with and without fluconazole, treated and apparently resolved with acupuncture, chiropractic, 2 treatments, 11-12. So it seems like he's had, you know, getting his nervous system and his energetics fixed. This is the second time where it responded, right? The headaches, or the whatever it was, the cough. For 8 years or 10 years. And then the diabetes was diagnosed in 11-12. Now, how long it had been there before that, don't know, because they typically don't test kids that age on a regular basis.
Exactly.
Was the diagnosis based on fasting blood sugar, hemoglobin A1C, all of the above?
Yeah, everything. I mean, he had been losing weight for a while, and he had been seeing other doctors, and nobody thought to test him. And so it was just when he started drinking and urinating a lot that it was figured out.
Okay. So the excessive drinking and urination weren't happening for a long time before?
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
So but he was on a very low-carb diet because of the thrush, so I'm sure that helped.
Yeah. Okay, and then he had thyroid antibodies and celiac, so he tested positive for that.
Whew. Correct.
Okay. And how has he been off gluten ever since, 100% since 2012?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
No birthday party indiscretions. I mean, he knows the seriousness in the down. Okay, good.
Absolutely not. No.
Okay, good. So 13 and 14, a good year. Only missed 22 days. Oh my God. That's a good year. Wow. But he excelled academically. He's clearly a smart kid that he can make that happen. Braces for his teeth in 2014. Migraine headaches. Starting in September. So that's when the headaches got really bad, was September 2014.
It seemed to be within a week or two of putting on those braces. And at the time, the thought was it was from the mobility of the teeth and maybe some pressure on the trigeminal nerve and going that direction. And now I'm wondering about heavy metal toxicity. I don't know if you know anything about, I don't know what the braces are made out of.
Well, I don't know about heavy metals leaching from braces. That would be something to research. That's not an area of his specialty with me. Do they also have any other dental work done? Any fillings or crowns or anything like that?
No. He has no fillings.
So just the braces. It's certainly worth looking into. I would guess that there's some kind of stainless steel or I don't even know what they're made of. So it's worth looking at.
Yeah.
Less likely that they're going to leach. Because they're not on a chewing surface like a cavity filling would be, and they're not inside the tooth, but it's certainly worth looking at.
Okay.
Yeah. But it could be the pressure. The migraines, he's having the pulsing and all that kind of stuff, right? I mean, they're true migraines.
Yeah, they're true migraines. Neurology, he's been through all of that stuff, and sound sensitivity with it, usually not so much the visual.
Okay. All right. And how often are these headaches happening?
For the past 8 or 9 weeks, it's been pretty much consistent. He's had a few days that were good, but for the most part, he's had a headache the whole time.
Oh, my. And then over the last year, how often?
They would kind of come and go, but when they came, they would be for a week at a time or a month at a time, and then he'd be clear for a few weeks or a few months.
Wow. And he's had some improvement, but not 100% with the chiropractic treatment. It sounds like you need to keep him on regular chiropractic treatment.
It seemed to work for a while, and then it just stopped working. It wasn't helping at all. So.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't getting to the true root, right? So there's when something like that happens and you start to treat and it gets better, and then it doesn't stay, then you always think, well, we haven't really hit the really true root. It's just giving some relief, taking some of the pressure off, but the true root is still there.
Right.
Wow, 2014 and 15 lost 50 plus days of school from chronic migraines. Holy cow, MRI normal. That's good. Treatment included Imitrex and similar drugs, NSAIDs, finally amitriptyline to try to prevent. All the treatments failed, most making him feel worse. Excedrin migraine helps most of the time, but causes increase in blood sugar that can be difficult to manage. Coffee helps only sometimes. So is it dose dependent on the coffee, or how far into it he actually takes the coffee?
That's hard to say. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Summer 2016 did well, but not his normal stamina. Dove and helped coach younger kids 4 hours a day, so definitely much more productive. In 110 to 116 degree weather, that's pretty cool. Attended some summer classes, which did well. Wow, that's great. But, you know, that might have pushed him, right?
Yeah.
Because he felt better. This happens all the time, especially with an 18-year-old, right? But it happens to adults too. You're feeling crappy, you suddenly feel better, and it's like, whoa, and then you just go and go, and that pushes you. It gets your adrenals on edge and then crash, which sounds like what happened to him.
And that's what happens to him on a regular basis.
Yeah. Yeah, because he finally feels good and wants to live his life.
Exactly.
And you can't blame him for that. And then he crashes. Damn.
Yep.
Okay, so the gluten-free has been for 5 years. The soy-free, how long?
Longer than that.
Longer than that. Okay. So you suspected a soy allergy?
Yeah. There may be a few breaches on that one because way back when he did an elimination diet, soy wasn't on that elimination diet for some reason, so he was using soy milk as a substitute, and he would almost pass out, cause extreme fatigue and almost pass out, and so it was taken out of the diet 100% for probably 4 or 5 years, and then a little bit of soy lecithin if it's in something that's...
Yeah, that's not usually a problem for even people with big extreme overt because it's the protein that we're going to respond to, not the phospholipids. He'd been dairy-free for a year but still had headaches, so started eating it again. Well, first of all, I'm going to just put in here, anybody with type 1 diabetes should be 100% dairy-free forever because it cross-reacts and attacks the pancreas, the islet cells in the pancreas. It can attack the insulin. So, he's young, and you don't want him to have the long-term side effects of uncontrolled diabetes forever. So dairy-free, I would keep him dairy-free. Even if it's not related to the headaches, it's going to affect his blood sugar and his pancreas, and you don't want that pancreas to wear out.
Right, okay.
Okay. You said beef and ham seem to trigger. That's interesting.
Right.
Is it organic versus not organic? Make a difference?
Didn't really try. I don't know.
Because sometimes it's what's fed to the animals, right?
Right.
They're fed grains or they're fed, all kinds of stuff, pesticides even, that are built up in them. So it may not be the beef itself. It may be the way it was raised. And ham is certainly processed and all kinds of other stuff, so it's probably not a good thing to eat. So he only has simple sugar when hypoglycemic. How often does he get hypoglycemic?
It kind of depends. Lately, not very often. It seems to cycle through, and I don't know if it's hormonal or if it's – I know when he gets really inflamed, when his body gets inflamed and his lymph nodes swell up, he'll – seems to get insulin resistant, and then as he's correcting, eventually it kicks in, and all of a sudden he just pops out.
And then it's too much, right?
Then it's too much. And then the other thing is when he exercises, if he's on a routine, normal routine, it evens out. But if he hasn't exercised in a week or two, and then he goes, his sugars could either drop precipitously or stay too high. And so it is very variable. There's no pattern.
Okay, where does he typically keep his sugars?
He tries to keep them between 100 and 150.
Okay, all the time. So, fasting
as we try. Yes.
He tries to remember to take multivitamin and vitamin D. Just started melatonin, which seemed to help with migraines and sleep pattern. But yesterday was a bad day, and sleep is off again. Coffee sometimes helps; it sometimes worse. That makes it challenging. You don't know which it's going to be.
Right.
Have you kept journals to just kind of see if there's a pattern, if you can play detective with it?
No, he's not really good at that, especially when he doesn't feel well. He doesn't even want to think about it or do anything.
Yeah. Okay. So he's got the severe sound sensitivity and that the chiropractic helps. Okay. So he tries to eat well, but when things aren't available or he's tired. Okay, so sometimes he'll overdo exercise when he's feeling good, visit with friends. Sometimes takes 3 or 4 days to recover. Stress level, you know, it'd be really high stress for me not knowing what the heck, whether it's going to be a good day or a bad day, or whether he's going to be able to go to school or not, or just. So
well, I'm not knowing his future. Yeah, he's out of school right now. So, you know, his whole future is up in the air.
Yeah. So he had high enough test scores when he did go to school that he had his pick of colleges,
mm-hmm.
but now he can't even finish senior year. Wow. So he's on insulin, occasional Advil and Excedrin. He's got a Rainbow Light, Active Teen, vitamin D, 5,000. So his vitamin D was 34. First of all, I would be checking his vitamin D every 3 months, and you may have to up that D to get that in the range. I'd like to see him 75 to 100 because of the autoimmune and because of the diabetes. Okay, so huge importance there. And you can, the doctors won't run it over and over again like that. I would just go to Direct Labs and buy a couple of vitamin D kits and just run it for him. But I would say 3 months. Okay. I don't know how long he's been on. When was he tested for that 34?
A month ago.
Okay. Yeah. So give him 2 months, the 5,000. You know, he's young. Maybe it'll be enough. My sense would have been at 34, I probably would have put him on 10, but you know, keep him on the 5 as long as he's been on that. And then at, you know, 2 to 3 months, test him again and see if it's making a dent. And if not, then you can up it. Okay. Some people have problems, genetic problems with the vitamin D receptors. So he may need more, but we don't know.
Okay.
So melatonin, and that seems to help with sleep, so that's good. So he's off of gluten, soy, peanuts. Cheese daily. I would get him back off that. I know it's hard. He's restricted, but if he wants to keep the diabetes under control.
Okay.
He said it used to affect glucose needs, which makes sense, but cheese doesn't seem to do that now. I mean, whey actually stimulates the production of insulin, it stimulates the production of insulin, which could be good and bad. I mean, that could throw his levels off. You're saying it doesn't right now, but it's
well,
certainly
allergenic. Well, it was causing high blood sugar, not low. Before.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's the other way.
Yeah, so that's the opposite of what I would have expected. But
right.
Okay. So eggs, salad, broccoli. I put him on the elimination diet we have in CMDS. I mean, just start at the beginning with trying to get his gut going. Clearly, you know, he started having gut issues when he was 8 months old. So there's something going on with the gut. Have you done any stool testing?
He had some sort of panel years ago, but nothing recent now.
I would go to Doctor's Data, get the Doctor's Data stool test.
Let's
see what's going
on
there. Yeah, they have the comprehensive chemistry with parasitology X3. We have it on the website, and then there should be a link. So if you go to my website, if you go to dradenmarie.com/lab testing, something like that, you have to log in to get access to it. And it's Doctor's Data comprehensive with parasitology X3. That'll give us an idea of his good flora. It'll give you an idea of pathogenic flora and then also some of the commensals. It'll also test for yeasts and funguses and a variety of parasites and show it up. And also they do sensitivities. So it'll say, well, in his particular case, we found bug X, and bug X did not respond to berberine, but it responded to oregano, and it didn't respond to this. So they give you about 5 or 6 different herbal kind of approaches to see what it responds to. And then, you know, supporting his immune system, he had the mono, you know, that EBV could still be living latent in there. There are some people getting good results with 16 ounces of celery juice every morning to help to get the blood, the HCL up, and then help with, you know, viral load and all that. So that's a possibility as well.
How do you do the celery juice?
Just juice it and drink it. Yeah. And if you don't have a juicer, then blend it and then strain it through a nut milk bag.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Is he just doing organic turkey and chicken, or is it a variety?
It's a variety. Some of it's organic, some's not.
Okay. And given the diabetes, I would be looking at avoiding any of the sweet fruits. And he's already avoiding watermelon and pineapple, but I would be avoiding at least do a reset, a metabolic reset, to try to get him at his best optimal and find what foods you can keep him on to keep his insulin needs at the lowest possible, because the more insulin, the more danger, right? So
right.
You want to keep his blood sugar steady with as little insulin as needed. And if you're really careful about the diet and get the grains and the sweet fruits out, he could get by on less insulin and have more control, because the less insulin, the better. And then he's not going to go into the hypoglycemic situations because he's got it under control. How much insulin is he on? Well, pineapple, mango, banana. I would just test it and see which ones he's got a meter. So I would, test the fruit and then, you know, just have it by itself, you know, and test them out in separate ways. So test, like, he avoids pineapple. So whatever others that he eats that are sweet, any fruits really, I would just test, because blueberries can even be shooting his sugar up.
Okay.
So test him, and really, it's not 2 hours. Like they tell you in diabetic school, it's really about a half an hour for fruit, half hour, 45 minutes. What you want to see is when he's testing it, he'll see it go up, up, up. It hits a peak and comes down, down, down. You want to keep that peak as low as possible. If you can keep that peak no higher than 110, 120, he's going to be in really good shape.
Okay, so the concern is when he goes low, he can go really low. So
that's right. But the reason, say that again.
When you say 110 or 120 as a high, where are you starting?
Well,
where are you wanting him to start?
Well, it depends on where he starts, right? Because if his blood sugar, his fasting is what did you say, about 100?
Well, that's the goal. No, it's not always there.
Okay. Yeah, but this is going to help them get there. And if you haven't gone through our insulin resistance program, I would highly recommend it. You absolutely, it'll give you everything you need to work with him. Absolutely. But I would say, you know, generally I say stay away from the foods, at least while you're trying to get reset. Stay away from the foods that raise the glucose more than 20 points.
In what kind of a serving?
A normal serving. You know,
normal
whatever
serving,
your normal serving.
His are going to be different. Okay. So any meal should not raise it.
Any meal should not raise it more than 20 points. Right. And so what you can do is you can find that sometimes if they're eating, like if he's eating blueberries, then it raises his sugar. But if he eats blueberries with lettuce, it may not raise his sugar, because the lettuce will slow down the absorption of the sugar into the system. And the more he learns to test his sugar and to track it and see exactly what all the foods and all the activities do, he's going to learn to adjust his insulin based on what he sees. He'll be in control. And the better to do it now when he's 18, rather than having him have years and years of problems that cause long-term and irreversible damage.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. So I'm just a little bit confused, because normally – you know, he figures out how many carbs and he pumps the insulin. And so if he doesn't pump the insulin, that's what you're looking at, is a half an hour after the meal. It shouldn't go up more than 20.
Well, he when does he take the insulin usually?
If his sugar is down in the 100 range, he'll take it right when he starts eating.
Yeah, so I would, if he's willing to experiment with this, I would do a super low carbohydrate meal and don't take the insulin before the meal and see what happens. If it goes up too high, then experiment with the amount of insulin before that meal that he needs to take in order to keep it in range. I mean, if he does enough testing, if he does enough just watching, just write down how much insulin he took, what he ate, what the sugar went to, and just keep track of that for 4 or 5 days, he's going to have an amazing amount of information that then he could learn, like, exactly how much insulin he's going to need before what kind of meal and what kind of activity. Because the lower he can keep it, the better he is. The doctors will say, yeah, just go eat the bananas and then just take more insulin. Well, yeah. Easy for you to say. It's not your body that's getting destroyed by insulin. It's not your blood vessels that are getting stiffened by it. And, you know, when the onset of diabetes is young like this, there's way more years for the insulin and the sugars to cause damage. So you want to keep both of them at the lowest you can, but you want to keep them steady. And it's clear he hasn't figured out how to keep it steady.
Right.
You know, he's going up and then he's going down. And if his A1C is like 7, is that what you said his A1C was?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so that means his average blood glucose is somewhere around 135, 140. That's bad, right? That's really bad.
Yeah.
His nerves have been damaged. But it's not their body. Yeah, so look inside and see how many peripheral nerves have been damaged, how many retinal cells are being damaged, and he's 18. What is it going to be when he's 35 or 40 if he keeps allowing his average blood glucose to be 140? If his average is 140, it means there's times it's going way higher, right?
Yes, it is.
You know, so they don't know. With all due respect, most of them don't have a clue how to control this other than giving more insulin. And when you look at the long-term damage of too much insulin, you know, he's young. You can show him some of the, get the insulin resistance thing and show him some of the stuff. Show him why it's so important. Explain to him why it's so important to do this now. And who knows, you know, some of the migraine activity might be related to the fluctuations in glucose and his brain not getting enough glucose.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right? So I would be looking at his gut and look at taking him, I say, look, let's just take you through this, have him do the gut assessment, figure out where his gut is messed up, look at his habits, and say, look, we want to get this under control. Let's see what we can do. Let's see what we can find. Because, you know, going back, he was 8 months old, and he had this gastroenteritis for a long time.
It was a short-term thing. It was maybe 24, 48 hours, but still, I'm sure it wasn't good.
Okay, so, but he was hospitalized. I guess I thought because he was hospitalized, it was a longer term.
No.
But maybe that has nothing to do with it. Maybe that has something to do with it. But a lot of this other stuff started when he was young and the multiple courses of antibiotics. So probiotics, super important. If he tolerates probiotic foods without having, you know, congestion, histamine reactions, whatever, probiotic foods, super important. But have a look at his gut. Have a look at his stool. Then you'll know. Then you'll know what his proportion of good flora to bad flora is. This is a tough one. I don't think it's insurmountable, but the biggest challenge is that he's an 18-year-old boy, and they're not the most compliant. I mean, it sounds like he's way more compliant than most of them because he knows the seriousness of this, but that's the hardest part, right?
He's pretty good about most things, but, yes, there's definitely some challenges, and the hardest part is truly when he feels horrible, he doesn't want to comply with anything. He doesn't want to take his supplements. He doesn't want to do anything. He just wants to go lay down.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Well, as long as he's not going and eating crap when he feels that way, that's the biggest problem. Leaky gut, probably has leaky gut, probably needs some good repair. You know, he may not be getting enough free-form amino acids to do that. If he's not digesting well, you know, looking at maybe some protein powder drinks that you can get him to have, sweetened with the low glycemic sweeteners like Lohan or stevia or erythritol, whatever it tolerates.
Okay.
And
he doesn't
get him
do
to,
stevia, yeah.
He does do stevia?
Yeah, he does do that.
Yeah, so there you go. So, you know, create some good protein powder shakes that have a lot of the healing herbs and foods in them.
Okay.
Okay, but I'd look at the gut. I'd look at the stool and see what's going on there.
Okay.
Like all those years of celiac, undiagnosed, and now, you know, clean, but he has his gut got ripped apart by it.
Right, right. So I agree that all of this needs to be done. I like your program and I like your idea of doing the 7 pillars, but I don't know if I can address that now. Is that something just deal with the gut right now?
Yeah, we deal with the gut. I would teach him the effects of the gut and you know, the stress on the gut, right? So, you know, just at least get him to stop before each meal. And, you know, I don't know if he's a family, you say grace. We said grace before meals when we were kids. But, you know, getting to him at least like, okay, before you eat anything, you got to calm everything down. So just take a few breaths. So that's addressing your stress pillar, right? Help him to address that. The nutrition pillar, you're already addressing that, right? The exercise, he exercises whenever he feels like it. Sleep, he's taking the melatonin, and that seems to be helping, right? So he really is addressing all that. And environment?
He's addressing it.
I mean, nobody's going to be perfect. But, you know, you're addressing these things, and you likely, I'm sure, have a clean environment. And if not, look at the environment. Are you spraying, you know, air fresheners? What kind of cleaning supplies are you using? What kind of deodorant is he using? I know my kids, you know, suddenly decided to go against my natural stuff and wanted Axe when they got to be 14. It's like, don't bring that stuff in my house because I can't even stand the smell of it. But they, you know, so exposures like that, just it, you're trying to reduce the load on his body.
Yeah, he does that. So
right, but the insulin resistance is very specific about, you know, all the science and all the how-tos of tracking and monitoring and, you know, the nutrients that he would need, you know, the chromium, magnesium. There's a lot there, which is, you know, beyond what we could do in the scope of this half hour on a phone call like this. But there's a lot there, and I'm just, like, pointing you in the right direction.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. Keep us posted, please.
Okay. Okay, we'll do.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you very
You're
much.
Welcome. You're so welcome.
I appreciate
Bye-bye.
All the help. That's a lot of good advice. I wasn't sure which direction to go, so this is helpful.
Yeah. Well, that's just it. It's really hard to know which direction to go.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. Okay, we had some other chat messages. I don't see any other hands up, but if anybody has something they want to add to what we just talked about, any comments about what we just talked about, any questions of your own or any cases, I'd love to hear from, you know, on the chat. Just type in or raise your hand if there's any specific things you feel like you learned from listening to these cases. Two very different cases, but the first one sounded like a hard case until we hit the second one, right? So I'm going to look. I see Daniela and Z raise their hands. So what I'm going to do is quickly look to see if there are any questions that were typed, and then I'll go back there. Refresh. Okay, there's a couple of them here. So are there obvious any other obvious clues other than the symptom checklist to tell if somebody has low stomach acid and discomfort for HDL due to gastritis or if it's a comfort from needing additional HDL? So here's the deal, right? Most people that have gastritis or reflux usually do have low stomach acid. There's rare. I mean, it happens that people are producing too much. The burping after eating, the feeling like of heaviness after the food is eaten because it's not really getting digested well, those are symptoms. So the symptoms are really clear. I would say if they've got gastritis, whether they have low stomach acid or high stomach acid, certain things are going to aggravate them. So certain acidic foods might aggravate them. Taking proteolytic enzymes on an empty stomach could be very painful for somebody who has an active gastritis or esophagitis. So I would say the symptom things are the best way to determine between them. There is the Heidelberg test where they swallow a thing. They swallow a little transducer. There's also pH paper on a string, which I've never gotten anybody to agree to do, but if you look online, you can find it, where they swallow this pH paper on, it opens up and then you pull it back up. Doesn't sound good to me. I haven't gotten anybody to say yes to it, and I've never tested it myself. If it's gastritis and low acid, would you just stick with things like slippery elm bitters, even if it's severely low acid? No. Okay, so if they have gastritis, we're going to start with the slippery elm. We're going to start with the DGL and other things to soothe and heal. We're going to go through the process of working that. Anything that affects the lower esophageal sphincter, so tight clothing, peppermint, things like that, I would be looking at an esophagitis because, you know, telling the difference between gastritis and esophagitis is really hard because of the location, unless it's way further down. So I would be healing first, and then I'd be looking at bitters and zinc to help produce more stomach acid. You can start with small amount of bitters and see if it's, if it triggers too much HCL, it could cause pain while the before the gastritis is healed. But the good news is you can generally heal gastritis or esophagitis and get that mucus lining working really well with DGL and slippery elm in less than a month. So that's what I would do, Charlotte. And then Lana, my GPL oat came back with low 5-HIA and elevated quinolinic acid, minus 5.8. I think it's due to recurrent gut infection. Any suggestions on how to increase serotonin balance, this ratio, other than 5-HTP? Well, there are things, if you think it's related to the gut, a lot of times when there's a recurrent gut infection, if it's in the small intestine, there's impairment to the migrating motor complex. So certain things that help to move the migrating motor complex along, amla can be very good for that. And there's a company called Pure Encapsulations makes something called Modal Pro that has some 5-HTP in it, but other things to help with that serotonin. But 5-HTP and vitamin B6 tends to be the best thing to do with the serotonin. But if it's related to gut, it's healing the gut. So going ahead and healing the gut. And you can certainly take the 5-HTP while you're doing that, but healing the gut. Okay, so I'm going to raise the hands. There's a bunch more questions here. I'm just going to go back, and we'll just alternate between live and the questions typed in. So, Daniela, hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have a few questions. The celery juice to bringing up the HCL.
Yep.
Somewhere I read that that celery is high in oxalates. I had kidney stones once. I don't remember how many years ago, about 7 years ago, 7.5 years ago. Is that something I should be concerned about? I eat quite a bit of cocoa powder, like raw organic cocoa and nuts.
Yeah, I mean, if you have an oxalate sensitivity, well, we don't know what the kidney stones might have been because of an oxalate sensitivity, also maybe other things that caused you to have a leaky gut and oxalate sensitivity. And the only thing you really can tell with that is to test, because it's quantity dependent. You don't ever get rid of oxalates completely, but you can look at quantity. So yes, juicing it might be too much oxalate for you. I think you just have to go slowly and just increase little by little and make sure that you don't overcome your tolerance. If you feel bad, I mean, generally speaking, people
feel
it.
I don't know, because I've been ingesting a lot of, like, daily raw cacao powder in my smoothie. Which is high, right? And I don't know if I have symptoms.
Well, you don't have symptoms like you don't, like, intolerant symptoms like a lot of folks with high oxalates do. You're right. It could be a kidney stone forming without you knowing it and have a kidney stone again.
Right. It's been,
so I just proceed with caution with all of that. I'd proceed with caution. I'd proceed with caution with the oxalates, just because you don't know. I mean, you can certainly you can certainly run, you know, like a test, an ultrasound, just to just check your kidneys, make sure they look okay, prophylactically, since you've had it before.
That's true. Well, what I have been doing is lemon juice, right?
Yep.
For a while after the kidney stone, I took Chanca Piedra, Yeah, I stopped.
Well, you know, given you had that before, it may not be a bad idea to, like, do a cleanse once a year where you do that for a week or so, just to preventively. Gravel root's another one that's really good for that, too. So you could do, like, this one-week cleanse thing that you do, kidney cleanse. And you can take, you know, kidney cleansing herbs with the Chanca Piedra, with gravel root, with some anti-inflammatories, and just do it prophylactically once a year, twice a year. It doesn't mean go abuse yourself in between, but it doesn't sound like you're abusing yourself to want to eat celery and raw cacao.
Right. Because I was interested when you said that higher HCL can be helpful in getting rid of ABV or
in anything. I mean, because you're digesting better, you're going to absorb things better out of your immune system. It's going to help you overall to get your nutrients up there. You know, and there's a lot of things that can help that are good antiviral type things that you can take if you've had an EBV. issue. You know, things like isatis and, you know, certainly oregano and thyme and coptis and there's a number of antiviral type herbs that you can look up and just see what suits your fancy. What I always recommend with herbs is, you know, we're not all herbalists, but we can do intelligent selection of herbs. It's like look up herbs that have the key function you're trying for, you know, whether it's antiviral, anti-inflammatory, and then read all the other properties of it. You're not going to take, obviously, all of the antiviral herbs or all of the anti-inflammatory herbs, but you read them and you go, wow, this one really resonates because it also describes me in other ways, especially if it's a really good source that describes the energetics of it too, you know, the emotional aspects and, you know, whether they're warm or cool or dry or damp or all that. So that's why, like in our adrenal program, we give people this list of, well, here's some herbs that could be useful for stage one adrenal fatigue, stage two, stage three. But then we give them all the other properties, like the energetics of it and the other actions and you know, the heat and cold, the Chinese medicine principles of it. And then people can read it and either resonate or not resonate with the particular herb.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So on your scoring test for, I scored not the highest, but it's very suspicious of leaky gut. And the naturopath I went to see in the summer wanted me to do a test for leaky gut because my nutrients, even though my diet was the best that he had seen that week, and it was Thursday already. I was still low on a bunch of antioxidants and some other things, and vitamin D, even though I've been actually taking quite a bit. It was too high on my regular blood test, but it was too low on the, what do you call it, that I did to the spectrocell.
The spectrocell, yeah. So that's intracellularly. So you always have to trust the intracellular versus the serum.
Yeah, so that was a little bit too low. Even though the serum was, like, way off the chart.
Yeah, so you can, what was the, I just lost track of what, we started out with the EBV.
We were talking about, he's suspecting leaky gut.
Oh, yeah, the leaky gut. So leaky gut, I like the Cyrex Array 2, I think it is, which has got permeability.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is the lactulose manulose test, where you swallow this lactulose or mannitus, and then you pee and you get it out in the urine. One or the other of those, they both work. I think the Cyrex is a little bit more modern technology, but either one of those can be done to test for it.
But my question is, if I'm already on your test scoring high, I have a lot of digestive trouble, get much worse. I have beginning like low amounts of antibodies to my thyroid, even though my thyroid hormones came out okay, except for the TSH. That was high.
Okay, and what was your free T3 okay? Your ratio between T4 and T3?
Everything was fine.
Fine according to the functional?
Naturopath, and he's a functional medicine doctor. Dr. John Dempster.
Okay.
You know, he did the mental health summit, and he was on Trudy's summit for anxiety. He's very knowledgeable.
Okay. Okay, good, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not just your average MD, Western MD.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I wish the MD had thought about doing this. And I even wonder if I had antibodies for a long time, because this is the first time that I've ever had it tested.
Oh, yeah, probably.
So who knows what we're looking
probably
at.
Probably. Yeah, so if you have antibodies, you almost likely have a leaky gut. So you can save your money. You can put yourself on a leaky gut protocol. And then when you do that for a few months, then you come back off of it, then you test.
Right.
To see if it's still there. Because you most likely have it. If you've got antibodies, you've got leaky gut, most likely.
Mm-hmm. And then he also wanted to know, he wanted me to do another test on, you know, something like what you just mentioned. I don't think it was Dr. Data, I'm not sure. On, like, what I have in there. What kind of dysbiosis.
Oh, the stuff, the gut bugs. There's a number of different labs. I've grown fond of Doctor's Data. There's a couple of other new ones out that I haven't tested yet. So, but of the ones that I've used, Genova, Metametrics, Doctor's Data, the one that I like the best is the Doctor's Data because I like the reports. Diagnostics isn't bad either.
Mm-hmm. So that will be worthwhile to do now?
I would do it after. I would do a protocol and then see what's left.
Right.
You know, if you're trying to, here's the thing. Ideally, you want to get testing before and during and after and, you know, just keep monitoring it. But not everybody has an unlimited budget for it.
Right.
So, you know, use your clinical judgment. Do a history where you can get like 75% to 90% of what's going on from the history. Make your best guess. Put them on. It's not going to hurt somebody to go on a leaky gut repair protocol, right? It's not going to go hurt them to do Right. I'm saying you, I'm doing the generic too for the patients as well. You know, it's not going to hurt to do it unless they're so severe that they need help right away and they've been doing all kinds of stuff for years and it hasn't worked. So you take yourself through, you take your patient client through a nice regime of leaky gut repair. And then, you know, you see how are your symptoms doing? You redo your assessment. You see where your scores are. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You take yourself through the entire course of what I've laid out, right? The way we do it in Grand. Go back through the Grand program. You have access to it. Go back through that and just take yourself through it. Now that you understand the whys and the wherefores by going through our mastery modules, just go through and take yourself through it step by step by step by step. And don't miss things, because a lot of times we think because we know better and we've been doing this for a long time that we're just going to skip over some things. And you may skip over the thing that matters the most for you.
Mm-hmm. Is glutathione part of that program?
Say it again.
Glutathione,
I don't just blatantly recommend it. It's definitely part of an autoimmune protocol, unless a person has specific polymorphisms in their genes that make it so that they don't do too much sulfur, and you have to be careful because you can actually overdo glutathione and then you have a backup of some sulfation pathways. So it's not like the, oh, just give tons of it, right, like people think, and you're
so
just going to pee away
that
now.
That's one thing you told me to take, and liposomal vitamin C. They were both liposomal, by the
way. Liposomal, yeah. That's the only way you want to do glutathione, topically or liposomally. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's certainly stuff that I would do in a leaking gut, in a autoimmune protocol, as well as the healing the leaky gut.
That's okay for now already, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just watch. Just watch that you don't get weird.
Now I find, like, even if I would take the liposomal vitamin C on an empty stomach in the morning, and I'm not sure if that's contributing to my bloating and gas and pain. It's gotten so much worse in the last week or 10 days. I've been taking charcoal quite a few times.
Okay, so that what you do is if you add some supplements and you start, and it's the same thing with your patients.
This is not new. Sorry, this is not so new. It's like I had.
But it got worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you changed something and some symptoms that were existing got worse or some new symptoms come up. It's called a clue. So what you do is you back off what you added and then you add them back one at a time. You stay away from it until the symptoms
subside. It seems to me almost like almost everything is difficult now. I don't know.
But
I had a very stressful 10 days or so a few weeks ago.
Well, that's a big thing, too.
I wonder if that's what did it.
Right. Well, you know, whenever you're suspicious, whenever some new symptoms come up or old symptoms get worse, I'd always look back. It's where having, if everybody could keep constant diet diaries and habit diaries and everything, that you could always look back and say, okay, what did I do differently? Okay, the things that changed was this level of the stressful thing, was I added these two supplements. Well, the stressful thing you don't have control over. Hopefully it's gone and it's not going to happen again, but these other two can. No. It's going to keep going, right? So then you want to say, well, that's not changing right now. I can change how I respond to it. I can do more meditation, yoga, heart math, whatever, to deal with that stress. But then you look at those other variables and you pull out the variables. So then the only variable in there is that stress. If your bloating goes back down a notch when you stop those two supplements, you suspect that it was one of those two. So you add one of them in.
I stopped. There's still pain. I'm thinking maybe I just have to go on some green juices and.
And whenever something comes up like that where there's bloating and gas and you can't figure out why, I'm always a big fan of an elimination where you're going on liquids only for a while.
Yeah, I think I'll have to do that because I had the fermented protein drink today.
Yep.
Sometime it's like 1:30, not and only water before. And that was fine. And then I came home for dinner, this time I decided to actually have wild rice and a little bit of butter because I was afraid to do eggs or fish or anything. I thought it just seemed better. And I had a little bit of pain. Yesterday I had a more normal meal. Oh, I had a little squash. It's not how I normally eat. I barely ever have.
Keep a food
carbohydrates.
Yes, yeah. Keep a food symptom journal. Even if it doesn't seem obvious, you may find that, you know, and keep an intensity. Always rate the symptoms in intensity. You can figure this stuff out. It just takes that detective work.
Yeah.
And it's really good to do it on yourself because then you'll be good with doing it.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I have another question about the HCL. I bought some today because I wanted to do the challenge because I think part of my problem is that I have low stomach acid.
Yeah.
And the one that I found without pepsin was with fenugreek. Is that okay?
Without pepsin and with fenugreek, that's interesting.
I'm in Canada, and that's what they had in the store.
You can certainly try it. What's the dose on the HCL?
I think it's 500.
Okay, that's about right.
So that'll be with fenugreek?
You can try it.
Mm-hmm. And I've been taking iodine, so about 6.5 years ago, I started having terrible hypothyroid symptoms, and a holistic medical doctor put me on, he tested me energetically, and he said I was, my thyroid was just 51% functional, the rest was attached to bromine, chlorine, and fluoride. And I had been eating a lot of non-organic blueberries at that time, tremendous amount,
right.
And so bromine. And it within a week to 10 days, I was completely back to normal by taking this detoxified iodine.
Mm.
And I've been doing this for years now, and it's not a huge amount, but I know that it absorbs well. I do it mostly through my skin.
Yep.
And, you know, I stopped gaining weight. I stopped being exhausted. I stopped being shaky, like I had to eat before going to sleep or I could not fall asleep. Stopped screaming at the kids and I stopped crying for no reason. Like, it was really all that.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's huge.
And it wasn't me. Like, it just, yeah. So I've been on that. And I know there's a little bit of controversy about taking iodine if there is Hashimoto's.
The controversy is this. It's not really a controversy. It's some of it is, I think, purely sensationalism. Number one, if you have excess iodine, you will aggravate Hashimoto's, guaranteed. Mm-hmm. If you have deficient iodine, you will aggravate Hashimoto's and your thyroid will not function properly. So
mm-hmm.
guess what? You have to find the right dose.
Both
if you're
well.
Taking
yeah.
a low, yeah, exactly. You're taking a low dose of a well-absorbed iodine and you feel better with it,
yeah.
it's not hurting, right?
Yeah.
Because things
yeah.
that aggravate
yeah.
Hashimoto's make you feel like crap.
Yeah, and I think that, I don't know how it happened, but I think for about a week I forgot to take it. And I'm good at it. It's like every day, you know, it's next to my sink when I wake up.
Yeah.
And I did feel that I was getting more of those kind of symptoms. So, yeah.
Well, there you
but
go.
I also wonder if the Hashimoto's...
Experiment.
Yeah. I think that Hashimoto's, maybe it was there a long time. Maybe
could
be. That's why I was reacting so badly to the bromine and the blueberries.
Yep. Might be.
Okay.
Might be.
Well,
there's a couple more questions coming in, so I'm going to go ahead. And if you have any more, then go ahead and raise your hand again, and we'll come back around with you.
You helped me clarify so much. Thank you so much.
Oh, good. Thank you. Okay, so we have Z, and then I'll flip back to the questions that were typed in. And then Z, hello.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Fine. Yep.
Awesome. So I have two short comments and two short questions.
Okie dokie.
On the blood glucose, I worked on an inline ICU blood glucose monitor. And one of the things that I know from the study of that is that the biggest problem is the degree of excursion from the target zone. So if your average is good on blood glucose, but you're getting big swings high and low, you will have considerably higher level of problems than you will if you have smaller excursions, which result in the same average. So what they said basically is that the ICU mortality is strongly tied to the size of the excursion sweep. And not only is ICU mortality tied to that, but a 3-year survival rate is also tied to that.
Well, good to know.
Right. So the trick is to keep it as narrow, the sweep as narrow as possible. So.
And what did I tell her? 20 points, right? That's what I like to see.
Right.
I like to see there be a, I mean, if in an ideal range, somebody's not diabetic or they have recovering diabetic, I like to see their range maybe between 85 and 100.
Right. So when they're doing in the ICU, when they're doing tight glycemic control, they want the blood sugar a little bit higher than your range. So maybe 15 points higher than that overall, but about the same size. Right. Because they're wanting to keep sufficient sugar present for healing in the ICU setting. So they don't try to keep it super low, but they don't ever want it over 140.
Yeah, we should never go above 140, ever.
Right. And so your maximum sweep should be, the maximum peak on your sweep should be under 140, and they try to keep it under 120.
Yep, that's perfect.
Right. So, yeah, but what I think is really interesting about that is the mortality rates and the three-year mortality rates.
Very interesting.
Tied to that just as much as ICU mortality rates do.
Very interesting.
So it's permanent damage, apparently, that's done even during a short ICU stay.
Yeah, and this permanent damage, what people don't realize, just every time your sugar goes above a certain level, it's maybe different threshold for each person, there's some damage done. And it may never be enough damage if occasionally you have a chocolate sundae and your sugar goes up to 160, but mostly it stays at 105 or 95. But the point is there is damage, and it's what's happening repeatedly. You don't suddenly wake up diabetic and have peripheral neuropathy that developed overnight.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so that was my note on blood glucose. My note on kidney stones. My husband has kidney stones. He has he pees sand all the time, and sometimes he pees gravel. And he says the thing which works better than anything else in terms of clearing it out and making it move once it started is cranberry juice.
Mm-hmm.
And his personal observation is that they come out looking like the little mace heads off of a medieval weapon. Unless you do the cranberry juice, in which case they come out looking like a raspberry. So
interesting.
So that doesn't really make them significantly smaller, but what it does is it makes them shred a lot less tissue on the way out.
Right. They're softer, smoother. Cool.
Right. So the way he uses it, if he's got stones moving, he drinks between 1 and 2 liters of cranberry juice a day, which is a lot.
It's a lot. Yep.
But he does that for 1 to 3 days, depending on how fast they're moving, and it takes the points off. So
nice. So it's not so excruciating.
Yep. So those are my two comments, my two questions. First one is cross-reaction between chicken and egg sensitivities. I am very gastrically reactive, but not, but I don't show an allergy to eggs. They make me want to die, but they don't actually show up on an allergy profile. So what's my likelihood to be cross-reactive to chicken?
You know, cross-reactivity usually implies that there's an allergic response, an immune system response. So, and if it's something that's causing gastrointestinal distress, it's usually some constituent in there that your body's not able to break down. So it's unlikely, I think, if it's not a true allergy, it's not like a true IgG allergy or IgA or IgE allergy. So I think it's less likely.
Okay. I'm 8 months into an extremely careful elimination diet, and I'm starting to reintroduce some things. And I would love to have eggs back, but I'm not trying those for another 18 months.
Okay. I don't blame you, because I had really bad reactions to eggs, too, and that was 35 years ago, and I'm not going back. I don't want to ever experience that pain again in my life.
Yes, unfortunately, one of the things that we raise on our farm is ducks, egg-laying ducks. It's one of our production animals. So I'd really like to have the eggs back, but I'll just wait. But chicken I was going to try, and I just didn't know if I should be fearful or not.
Organically raised, so you don't run the risk of the pesticides and the hormones and the antibiotics and all the other stuff.
Right. Okay. And then the last question is, I have, I would call it resistant athlete's foot. Somebody mentioned it earlier today in the first case, I think. And I have treated it topically with all the various spray products that are available over the counter. I have treated it with urine, which provides temporary relief but does not get rid of it. And it has gotten worse since I went on the elimination diet.
Worse since you went on the elimination diet. So
more aggressive. So it's not worse in terms of the severity, but it is on the move. It is moving up into new areas.
Have you looked at your gut? Have you looked to see if you have a fungal overgrowth in your gut? Because usually if you've got it in your feet, it's usually because it's overgrowth from your gut.
So we know I've got SIBO, and I have Candida, two kinds of Candida, but not Albicans.
Mm-hmm.
And I am on a super low carbohydrate, so I'm not feeding the little stinkers.
Right. But are you doing anything to kill it or crowd it out? Probiotics, antimicrobials.
So I will be starting silver and oregano oil for the SIBO. And so that's coming up, but that we've been just getting ready to start that. And
so it may or may not work, right? So what one of the things that we see on a stool test is that they'll do a culture insensitivity.
Right.
And so you could see, and I find oregano, most of the candidas are completely resistant to oregano. And all, and this is just, you know, a sampling of several dozen to 100 tests over the last few years. But that's what I find of like oregano. We're giving everybody oregano and nobody's sensitive to it.
Okay.
I haven't seen anybody sensitive to it. Berberine tends to be a big one that works.
Okay.
For a lot of people, it's always different. Caprylic acid seems to be good. So MCT oil, coconut oil.
That's in my coffee every day.
Okay. And then what's another one that works? And I'm just throwing this out there as to one, because it varies from person to person.
Right.
I've seen Urvarsi work. So if somebody does have a tendency towards bladder, kidney stuff, and then they show up with Urvarsi, I'm like, ooh, maybe we'll do that because it's really supportive of the urinary tract. So, yeah, so looking at what those things are. Grapefruit seed extract shows up some of the time not. But I've seen, like, very consistently, almost everybody is resistant to oregano. It's really, and I don't know how they test it, what they use. They say oregano oil. So I'm assuming it's oregano essential oil. But, I mean, I still take it and I still use it because I find that if I start to feel like a cold's coming on and I dose with oregano oil, it goes away. That's different. That's a viral thing. So, and oregano is a strong antiviral, and that might be it. It might be that it's very strong antiviral, but it's not as good of an antibacterial or an antifungal as we think.
Okay. And then is there anything to do topically to...
Yeah, topically, one of the things I've found helpful is there's a supplement from Thorne called SF722, and it's calcium undecylenic acid, which is extracted from castor bean oil.
Okay,
and I have them open up, it's called SF, like San Francisco SF,
right.
722,
okay.
Thorne Research.
Okay.
And it's calcium undecylenic acid from castor bean oil. And I would have you pop open those capsules and put it on. And then tea tree oil. And then wrap it in some gauze and then put on a sock and, like, soak the gauze with the tea tree oil so you've got it overnight. If it's between your toes, you know, put the gauzes between the toes. And then put your sock on so it doesn't stain your sheets.
Okay.
That can be helpful as well. Okay.
Well, I'm off to kill the little bastards.
You got to make an inhospitable environment for them, too. So keep that in mind.
Awesome. Cool.
Okay.
I'm good.
Great.
Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay. So let's go back to, and Lynn, if you have anything to pipe in response to any of these, please do. You always have good stuff. Judy says braces can leach lead. So in answer to our question earlier about the son or the 18-year-old, the braces can leach lead. Thank you, Judy. So Charlotte says, how do you suggest to pinpoint what in your meals for the day could be the cause of response of the lymphatic tissue in the small intestine? It says the amount of times it takes for the food to enter the small intestine from the stomach. Would you have the reaction as soon as the allergen entered your small intestine, or the lymphatic tissue respond? I find that because it goes into the gut and there's the whole gulp, the lymphoid tissue in the gut, that oftentimes it happens very quickly, even though the food hasn't actually reached the small intestine. It can happen pretty quickly. And how would you pinpoint if it's a food from breakfast, lunch, or causing the reaction based on the amount of time it passes? There's no very specific way other than just keep, like, if you have some suspicious food, so you had breakfast and then you had lunch, and then an hour after lunch or 15 minutes after lunch, you got really bloated. Every single food at both of those meals becomes suspect, and then you test them in different variations. Maybe you test them and you wait the number of hours it took before that symptom came on, before you eat another meal, and see if it happens again. But it's really a matter of pulling apart those meals, and everybody becomes in the lineup. They're all suspects until you prove them innocent. Okay. Okay, that's all I see on the questions typed in. Oh, a couple more. Beverly said, just got back from Stanford regarding 3-hour hydrogen breath test. They said it was positive. So that was, I'm assuming you mean for SIBO. So you want to know if it's methane or hydrogen gas that they found. Even though they wouldn't let me take a picture of my results worksheet or write them down as they were gathered, I stood there and typed them into a Word doc, hiding it from them. Ha ha. She had high methane, but the hydrogen stayed relatively low. The methane went up as high as 34. They called in a script for it, of course, but I'm trying to decide whether I should wait for stool study or go ahead and take it. So here's the deal. Go into the module, go through the whole SIBO thing. It's more than killing the bug, right? You've got to restore your migrating motor complex. You've got to heal your leaky gut. You've got to look at your flora. Go through that module and then decide whether you're going to take it. Most people who take the antibiotic without doing all the rest of the stuff don't get results. So look at what we've laid out for you. Look at the various herbs that you can take instead. And if you feel like, heck, you want to do that, make sure you do everything else that goes along with it, especially the migrating motor complex. Really super important. And it's all in that chapter. So Charlotte says, I need a little clarification about H. pylori. An effect on ulcers. In the video, you mentioned that it may be natural inhabit in the gut and therefore present when an ulcer is detected. So do you think H. pylori does indeed contribute to ulcers, or is it just present on ulcer tests because it's a natural inhabitant of the gut? And is there a way to detect it other than labs? My mom thinks she has it. She'll go to the doctor, but there are signs that can point to an overgrowth of H. pylori right now. Experiencing bloating and constipation, dry stool and nausea after meals started 2-3 weeks ago. Yeah, so it's a good question. You know, I think it is a normal inhabitant, but it's the overgrowth that causes the problem. E. coli is a normal inhabitant. It's the overgrowth that causes the problem. Candida albicans is a normal inhabitant. It's the overgrowth that causes the problem. So it's when you detect the H. pylori, when you have a bunch of symptoms and then you do a stool test and you see the H. pylori there, then I would say that they're probably overgrown to the point where they can be measured, because most people don't have it positive. You know, a lot of people get it tested. When I look at H. pylori when I'm thinking of someone who's not necessarily responding to a leaky gut protocol or a candida reversal protocol, or, you know, taking enzymes, taking probiotics, they oftentimes have that burning pain if there is an ulcer or gastritis, and that sort of thing. One of the ways you might be able to tell if it's H. pylori is take some stomach acid and see if it gets worse. So if you do an HCL challenge and you actually find yourself worse, that could be an indication that there's an H. pylori overgrowth. So those are the main ways to know. And a stool test. I find that the BioHealth has the most sensitive stool test of the ones I've tried so far. Can't say that I've tried it every single time. But if she's experiencing bloating and constipation, dry stool and nausea after meals, then there's clearly something going on. But I would be looking at all the other pieces, right? I'll give you ideas for certain things, but I want to make sure everybody's aware. Got to be looking at the whole picture, the whole picture. So Judy, and this is for our young man who had braces and has experienced fatigue, I started having terrible health issues after getting braces a few years ago. They moved my jaw. My face didn't always feel right. They pushed back my palate and thus the tongue and made me feel like I was always choking or obstructing my airway at night. I started feeling extremely fatigued and would fall asleep whenever I sat down. I became chemically sensitive during that time and had to give up my job. I know what happened to me may not be what happened to him, but they will need to assess his airway, maybe with an ICAT scan by someone who really knows how to read them well. Braces can change the structure of the cranial bones. His issue sounds like a lot to do with his blood sugar and gut, but it may also have to do with the history of braces. Judy, thank you so much for that response, because it definitely, you know, and it's a suspicion that Evelyn had, is that, you know, she put it down for a reason, right? She had seemed like it got worse after that. So certainly these are things for you to look at, Evelyn, for this young man. So Lisa said, I scored 50 on the SIBO assessment, just in the medium range, and scored very high, 275 on Candida and gut dysbiosis. I was thinking of starting on the Candida and gut dysbiosis protocol. It's been over 2 years since I did a protocol on dysbiosis, and for SIBO, I have in the last year done Candibasin, DER by Metagenics, Elemental Diet, FODMAP. Just wondering if this is the right plan, since I remember the SIBO module mentioning to start with SIBO first. You know, your signs are showing you're more likely to have the Candida. So I would say, you know, the assessment or the recommendation to start with one or the other first would be based on which one is more likely to be a problem. And so you're clearly very high on the Candida. You can start with that protocol. Again, you know, it doesn't hurt to look at the things for migrating motor complex, especially the vagus nerve things, the coffee enemas and things like that that can be helpful. You might take some things to help with the Candida and, you know, enzymes and things like that, but also maybe take some of the Modal Pro to make sure that you're going. In Beverly, that Modal Pro is a supplement from Pure Encapsulations that actually helps to move things, get the migrating motor complex. But always remember it's habits as well. So migrating motor complex, you want to be at least 3-4 hours between meals, 4 hours really ideally or more, because it takes that about 3 hours after you eat, 3.5, that the migrating motor complex starts to move to push things along. And it's when that is not working properly that a lot of the overgrowth happens in the small intestine. Okay, so... Okay, I think I got all those questions. I'm going to do one more refresh. Beverly, thanks. I agree, and I'm going to do the leaky gut and all the things you suggested. I was just curious if you said one test was better based on high methane. I mean, high methane says, yeah, there's something overgrowing in there, right? Does it mean that you should take some prescription antibiotics, which might screw up the rest of your gut? I would think carefully about it and look into it and research it really well. Okay, so chat. Lynn, was there anything else on the chat? Lena's leaving. Good night. Yes, there's a recording. And I think we're done. We're at 2 hours. So, Dan, hi, made it to the call. Glad to be able to participate. Sarah, you're fine. Okay, Daniela. There's nothing that I know of like pepsin that's vegetarian, Daniela. Maybe the one with the fenugreek is the vegetarian HCL. Duh. Thank you. Okay, I'm not seeing any others. GGL, licorice, okay for someone with high blood pressure? No, it should not. GGL is, yes, GGL is, but not regular licorice, correct. It's the glycyrrhizic acid that they take out in the GGL that would be causing it to go up. Okay. Brands of algae oil with omega-3. Nordic Naturals has one called Algae Omega. And then there's Opti-3. And then there's Omega Zen. Those are all the sources that I know of. There might be one or two others now. Janine wants to know, for the liver gamaccio, how much a day would I need to take? Oh, man. When you're talking foods, there's no specific amount for a specific condition. I would just take what feels right to you. You know, you could put a tablespoon on your salads or whatever. Of the milk thistle, how much? Yeah. You'd have to look up how much is in how much is in a tablespoon or a teaspoon. I mean, it's hard to tell because most of the articles are talking about 600 milligrams of milk thistle extract. Barbara said, okay, would this use include topically on the toes? You mean putting the SF722 and the tea tree oil? Sure, you could use it topically. Absolutely. Okay, great. And that's it. I'm going to go one more time to the people part, the phone part, and make sure nobody else has a question before we hang up, and then I'm going to call it a night. You guys had great, there were great cases, lots of learning to do there. Let me grab my mouse. Q&A, I don't see any other questions typed in. Oh, I do. On the modified SCD and FODMAPs combination listed, notes to avoid licorice tea. Would you avoid DGL? I think you just tested. I don't think DGL is a problem. I think DGL is very helpful. But again, we're all the experiment grounds. You are, they are. And you say go proceed with caution. And the thing with SCDs and FODMAPs is you're not going to ever avoid them completely. It's just a matter of volume. And you're not going to get very much in a little bit of licorice tea. I was asking which stool test is better. I would go with the doctor's data. But I think you've got enough to go on right now, and I would maybe go through a protocol for that and then do the doctor's data to see what's left. Okay, so that's good. And then conference, Z has her hand up again. Maybe I didn't put your hand down, but Z, did I forget to put your hand down, or did you put it back up?
Nope, it's just up from forever.
It's up from forever. Okay, good. All right, I'm going to stop the recording. I'm going to put this on interactive so we could all say goodbye to each other, and we're going to call it a night. Thank you, everybody, for being here. I hope this was helpful. And bye-bye, everybody. Talk to you soon.
Have a good night.
Bye.
You're welcome. Thanks.